remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everyone. So this morning, I want to talk about practice. Zazen practice and everything else. As some of you know, we have a 3-day sesshin retreat coming up in a few weeks. And I know at least a couple people have express some anxiety about what that might be like. So, in particular today, I want to talk about the spirit of our practice and how we actually find our way as the human beings we are. In a sense, what it means to mature in practice. What does that mean for us? And how to take responsibility. This is key. It's key for us to take responsibility for our practice. So this is a story. We all like stories, right? This is a story about a man named Nanda. And it Dogen Zenji discusses this in the fascicle writing that he does. It's called the Eihei Shingi, Guidelines for Officers at the Eihei Monastery. So the officers in a monastery, and we've had a couple of examples recently. You can't hear me?
No.
Okay. Oh, okay, great, thanks for... shall I start over, or you got the beat? We're talking about practice, we're talking about Nanda, and we're talking about a story of an officer. So the officers in a monastery take responsibility for supporting practice of that place. Okay, so we're all officers of the monastery of our life. So they shift positions. So you might be head of the meditation hall 1 year, head of the kitchen another year, guest manager another year. But all of this is about making it possible for the teachings to flourish, making it possible for the practice to flourish. So traditionally, there's the director who kind of oversees everything, the Eno, who is in charge of the forms and rituals and the spirit of the Zendo, the director of the finances and the material aspects of the monastery, and the Tenzo, the head of the kitchen. So the key aspects of these jobs are a willingness to step forward and engage in supporting community life. So if we think about our lives as a place that we support the community, it's easy to see that a description of a monastic officer is a description of who we want to be in our communities. So these instructions tell us how to take responsibility, how to take care of our practice, how to take care of our lives, how to actually move into maturity. So the first thing that Dogen says is that an officer of a monastery is precious and venerable. So every time we step into being an officer, taking responsibility for our lives and our practice, we center ourselves in the sense of the whole instead of me, me, me. This is a precious and venerable step. It expresses our understanding and expresses generosity towards life and ourselves and others. So we don't ignore our individual needs, but we feel ourselves as a part of the whole. We are in response to the whole. And this is very concrete. It's not specific duties, right? if you go to work and you're a teacher, you teach a class. If you have to go to meetings, you go to meetings. It's very specific, and it's also general. So Dogen tells us that in terms of selecting officers, those selected should be mature in the way. Mature in the way, which is going to relate to this story that I have to tell you. Because then he contradicts himself and gives us an example that runs completely contrary. This is very Dogen, right? He says one thing, and then the next sentence he says something completely different. He says, Zazen has nothing whatever to do with sitting down. At the sight of your regular sitting, right? So this expansive and particular, expansive and particular. So he tells us the story of Nanda. Not Ananda, but Nanda. And I really love this story because Nanda is basically clueless. And he stumbles along, and with the help of the Buddha, he matures. So if we think of this as a parable or a teaching story, we can approach the various aspects as different ways to think about how we are in our practice, how we are in our Zazen practice, how we are in our ordinary life. So I personally could relate to Nanda, and I think maybe some of you can too. Suzuki Roshi spoke of our inmost request, that which prods us, calls us, requires us to practice. And this inmost request has a kind of trickster quality to it. We often get more than we bargain for. So, here's the story of Nanda. Nanda was a lay student of the Tathagata, which means, Tathagata means Buddha. And this is the story. When the world honored one, also another description of the Buddha, was visiting a city, Nanda thought, it says here, he informed Nanda by visiting him and shedding light on his house that it was time for him to receive the precepts. Nanda thought, this must be the world-honored one. He sent someone to look, and sure enough, it was the world-honored one, and Nanda wanted to see for himself. So he was in his comfortable home with his wife, very comfortable, very cozy. And he tells his wife, I'll be right back. And she's like, really? And he says, of course I will. I'll be right back. So we can think of this as something sparks our curiosity. We see a sign, Ocean Gate Zen Center, we read something. We have a sense, sometimes a queasy sense, that we want to do something more. We want to look more deeply. And it calls us, speaks to us, says, please, come and investigate. Come and investigate. We want to know about this Buddha. We want to know, we can think of the Buddha as our true nature. We want to know what's real in this life. What is real? What is the deepest? What is this inmost request calling me for? And we think that we can just step out of our home. You know, I'll be right back. You know, we have this like cozy identity or whatever, and we say, yeah, I'll go check out the Buddha, but don't worry. I'll be right back. I can come home. Nothing serious is going to happen, you know. We're sure, in a sense, that we won't be really touched, that we won't be deeply, not me, I'm just this ordinary person. How could I be truly touched? That's for other people, special people, right? But something else is taken hold. The Buddha handed Nanda, so Nanda finds the Buddha. The Buddha handed Nanda his bowl and asked Nanda to serve him rice in it. When Nanda came back with the rice, the Buddha was gone. So So Nanda offered it to Ananda, one of Buddha's disciples. And Ananda says, who gave you that bowl? Ananda says, the Buddha did. Then Ananda said, then you should go give it to the Buddha. So Ananda went away and found the Buddha and offered him the bowl. Then Buddha asked a disciple to shave Nanda's head. Ananda said to the disciple, you can't hold a razor to the head of the prince of Jambudvipa. That's who Nanda is, right? But he also thought, even though I obey the world-honored one in the morning, I can go home in the evening. Buddha understood his thought and transformed the place where Nanda stood into a deep pit so that he was unable to return home. Okay, so Nanda goes out of his house, his comfortable identity. He says, I'll be right back. I can come back. Nothing serious is going to happen to me. But he responds to Buddha's request for an offering. A simple act of giving. Rice is very simple. Nourishment. And when he can't find the Buddha to give it to him to pay homage to our awakened nature, he tries to give it to whoever is around. But Ananda says, no, you must offer it to the Buddha. You must make this offering to your true nature. We can't get away with substitutes. We might try, but we can't really get away with substitutes. So hapless Ananda ends up with the Buddha, and all of a sudden someone shaving his head. So if we understand shaving your head as our own awakened nature calling us or moving us to shed the attachments that we have, to shed the identities and attachments that we have. But what does Nanda say? You can't do that to me. You know, I am a prince. I, right? This was not a part of Nanda's plan when he left his house in the morning. His self-definition rears up. I will not let go of my attachments. But Buddha's not having any of it. He's not listening to, don't you know who I am? This act of giving up who we've been, giving up our set notions, all that we've cherished, doesn't mean that we are brutal. It means that we're willing to have our own awakened nature enter our life as it is and allow that which is encrusting us to drop away. But you notice, he still thinks he can control the process. He still thinks he can go home. He says, even if I obey the world-honored one in the morning, I can go home in the evening. I can just do this for a little while. He still thinks he can go back to his habitual way of thinking. But the Buddha makes it impossible for him to turn back. When we actually listen deeply to our inmost request, it's too late. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to run off to a monastery or do anything like that. It means that if we truly listen, we go into the depth of who we are. In a sense, maybe Nanda needed his cluelessness when he began, because if he knew he was going to end up in a deep pit, he never would have left home. He knew there was no returning, he never would have left home. So here we have Nanda stuck in a pit, his head is shaved, he's unable to go back. Right? And what does the Buddha do? He says, make Nanda an office. So this is the next part. Buddha said to Nanda, to Ananda, make Nanda an officer. So didn't we just hear that an officer is someone who's mature in the way? Somebody who's really ripened and able to be stable and all this. But that's not what our awakened nature says. No, you have to take responsibility from the beginning. Buddha said to Ananda, make Nanda an officer. Ananda conveyed Buddha's words to Nanda. Nanda said, what's an officer? And Ananda said, that's a job of taking responsibility in a temple. Nanda said, what kind of work is it? Ananda said, after the monks go out baking, you sweep the garden, sprinkle water, collect firewood, remove cow dung, cleanse the space, make sure the things are not taken, close the gates and doors and such for the Sangha. In the evening, you open up the gates and clean the toilets. Now, doesn't that sound like an appealing job description? But it's also our life, right? You know, an officer, the one who's mature in the way, actually responding to the way, is, you know, you make sure things aren't taken, you collect firewood, you tend to the garden, and you clean the toilets. Yeah. So, this Nanda, who stumbles into this pit, gets his head shaved, and then all of a sudden he's asked to take responsibility. This points us to the fact that our practice, taking responsibility, engaging in caring for our world, for our lives, is not the result of practice. It is the practice. From the beginning, the Buddha, Nanda's guide, is saying, now, do it now, don't wait. And Nanda is willing. You know, they don't tell us how he got out of the pit, but I would suspect it was his willingness. Well, what's an officer? What do I need to do? What kind of work is it? The next section is, when this conversation was over, the monks went out to beg. Nanda went to close the gates for the Sangha. When he closed the gate in the west, the gate in the east flapped open. When he closed the gate in the east, the gate in the west opened. And this went on and on and on and on. Nanda said to himself, if something is stolen... So he's running around, imagine, he's running around, flapping around, trying to say, close this gate, close this. Have you ever felt that way in your life? It's like, oh no, you know, this thing, my to-do list keeps growing. You know, looking around, there's so much that needs to happen, and I'm like running around. So Nanda's like, you can imagine, he's a little bit disturbed at this point. He says to himself, well, if something is stolen, then in the future, when I become a king and build hundreds and thousands of beautiful temples, that should be more than enough to compensate for any loss. So he's bargaining, right? He's worried that something is stolen, perhaps frustrated, perhaps confused. But what solution does he come up with? That he's going to become a king. He's going to have absolute control. He's going to be able to compensate later for any loss in the present. He still doesn't get it. He's tied to the future when he'll be powerful. You know, when we think of the king, this is like, he's now a prince, right? But he's going to be king. He's going to be in charge of everything. That worldview is centered on himself. He believes that there'll be power and riches, and that's what the answer is. He doesn't see that his movement around and his care, closing one gate, closing another gate, is actually the most important thing. So I think all of us have experiences like this, you know, how hard we try to control things, how much we believe in our ability to control things, that we'll someday become better, more powerful, more perfect. And we can mistake taking responsibility for some future version of perfect calmness and serenity. But that's not where practice happens. So, in the next section. Oh, wait, I want to talk a little bit about this as Zazen. I was struck when I read this about the gates opening and closing being like our breath. It's like our breath in Zazen. This turbulent mind, this place that we've said we're going to be. When we're sitting Zazen, how often do we think we should be something else? That this turbulent mind, this anxiety, this coming and going is not enough. But Suzuki Roshi tells us again and again and again, this very mind, Dogen Zenji tells us again and again and again, this very mind is Buddha. This practice, this very mind is Buddha. This practice is the practice of awakening. So, after this delusion that he's going to become a king, he decides to leave. So he really is going to try and go back home and work on his powerful future when he'll be king of the world. Fearful that he would run into the Buddha if he took the main road, he took a back road. But nevertheless, he ran into the Buddha. He hid himself in a bush. And when the wind blew, his body was revealed. Buddha said, "What are you doing in there?" And Nanda replied, "I'm worried about my wife." So he decides to go home. He doesn't like say, "Look, you know, my life is about going home and working on being a king. And that's going to be my practice." No, he tries to sneak out of responsibility. He takes the back road thinking maybe if he goes this way, his awakened nature will not see him. He'll be able to kind of like figure out a way. But no, no, no. Buddha sees him. Nevertheless, he ran into Buddha on the way home. And what does he do? He hides in a bush. Now, really, do you really think you can hide from your awakened nature in a bush? It's like, no. The wind blows and he's revealed. This is part of our Zazen practice. We are revealed to ourselves. It's part of being in community. We are revealed to one another. And we want to be revealed, don't we? We want to be revealed to what is most true in us. We want to know what is most true in us. So, Nanda has said enough already. He wants to go to his cozy home. He doesn't believe that release from suffering is possible. He cannot hide, however, from his inmost request. He cannot avoid his life. So in this encounter, we learn something more about our practice and what it means to take responsibility. Because Nanda doesn't even fess up. He says, "Well, I'm worried about my wife." In other words, I'm putting my own avoidance of my awakening onto somebody else, let me think of something, right? Here I am hiding in the bush. You can imagine Nanda's like quivering, like seeing the Buddha walk by, hoping, and then whoosh. And what does he say? "Oh, well, I'm not really running away. It's my wife that needs me. It's this other thing. I've got some reason. There's always a reason." Isn't there always a reason for not taking our lives seriously and looking? And seriously, by the way, does not mean not having fun. A life without fun is pretty poor indeed. So when Nanda says this, there's a whole lot longer to the story. I won't read you the whole thing. But basically, Buddha takes Nanda and puts him in his sleeve. He takes Nanda, puts him in his sleeve, and then shows him all the various realms of existence. And encourages him to practice by showing him why to practice, how to practice, in terms that he can understand. He responds compassionately. He meets him where he is. And that's what we have to do in our lives. We don't... This making up stories of later or what we need to be before we can practice is another version of saying, oh, actually, I have to go home because of my wife. And over these, over time, flying around in Buddha's sleeve, Nanda clarifies what it means to practice. He develops a heart of practice free from all the notions that he's had. Dogen praises Nanda at the end of the fascicle, saying, his precedent of realizing the way should be revered and longed for. His precedent of realizing the way should be revered and longed for. He uses this example as the first in his writings on what it means to be a to be an officer. This is not something, this is like, so he's reaching out to us and saying, guess what, we're all Nanda. Nanda isn't particularly adept. He's not particularly smart. He's always trying to slip away. He's pretty clueless. But he's willing. Even when he backs away, he's willing. So I think this is the important point. Of course we try and hide sometimes. Of course we have goofy notions. We try and con our deepest truth, right? Bargain and say later. But as we engage, we grow in our capacity to take responsibility. Being Nanda is not the problem. When we can trust that we really can't hide, when we keep coming back and we listen to Buddha's voice. In the Jodoshin tradition, they say, you listen so that you might truly hear. So we practice listening so that we might truly hear, so that we are not successful in hiding behind a bush. And we stay awake to this dimension of our lives. In Zazen, we invite an encounter with our true nature. In our lives, we clean toilets, we take care of business. That, too, is the activity of a Buddha. And we stay awake to this willingness, this willingness to deepen and mature, even when we find ourselves with our head shaved in a pit. Thank you.